Jeannie Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Nicole Thomas, VP of Information Services for McKinney Flavelle, and today is Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast. And today I have a very special guest with us all the way from the Philippines, Mr. Christian Ide Moeller, president and co-founder of Lionheart Farms. How are you doing today, Christian?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. I'm here in Palawan in the farm. So nice to be on the podcast with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Christian, because I was able to witness directly a couple of months ago that you have a very interesting and frankly admirable operation on the island of Palawan in the Philippines. And I'd like to get into that a bit and talk about what you do there at Lionheart Farms. You know, maybe first let's begin by getting a little background on you, who you are, Christian. So who are you?
Well, I'm originally a farmer's son from Denmark, and my family have been farming for let's say more than 500 years. And obviously, the kind of farming we do in Denmark is very different from tropical agriculture, which I'm now committed to.
Sure.
But I grew up in Denmark, and you know, it just so happens that my family is also in the shipping business. And you know, because of that, I always heard these stories from Asia, and it just ended up that I would be working for a multinational company in Denmark that brought me to Asia when I was 24. I started in Vietnam, and ever since I've had this Asia bug. And and the way it evolved was that in the early 90s, I got involved in agriculture and food production in China. Was working mainly with the North American market, working with most of the supplying to most of the major retailers. And as a matter of fact, I did a lot of work with Red Lobster.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Red Lobster was one of my main customers with Olive Garden. And I went through that whole period when it left and became Darden and so forth.
Right.
So that was sort of my first touch point with agriculture. And I was the first generation that did not actually train to become a farmer. And I think maybe it was meant to be that I should go out and work in other industries and, you know, see how you get to the core of the business model and then maybe take a different view on how agriculture and farming in the tropical south could be developed, because there are a lot of challenges, and that's what I've been able to do in Lionheart.
Well, you know what? That's the perfect segue there, Christian, to tell us a little bit more about Lionheart Farms and what you grow and how you do it.
Yeah, so I mean, today we have a farm which is placed in the south of Palawan. So Palawan is the most western island in the Philippines, just above Malaysia, and if you kind of imagine across from Vietnam. And it happens to be the largest province in the Philippines. And we have a 3,500 hectare farm, and that's on the west coast there. This is a coconut farm.
Okay.
And what's a little bit unique about this farm is that when we started, which is about 10 years ago, we realized that in order to get to introduce not only new high productive varieties, but also take a good look at agricultural practices, as well as delivering a new level of work productivity, because this is one of the biggest challenges in the global south when you look at farming mm-hmm. and food production, is actually that most of it is happening at a sort of subsistence level. Incomes are,
right.
You know, one quarter to one fifth of a living wage. And clearly something has to change wow. if we want to have a next generation of farmers. So that became the big challenge. And so the first observation was that when we look at coconut farming, which is obviously one of the sort of main crops together with rice, pineapple, and banana in the Philippines, and coconut farming makes up about 50%.
Oh, wow.
So coconut farming is very important, and Philippines obviously being the top exporter to the global markets, mm-hmm. I saw this opportunity to focus on what we call coconut flour harvesting, which is an ancient okay. tradition of harvesting the sap directly from the flour.
Right, interesting.
It's a tradition that's associated with actually drinking the sap directly. That has a lot of health attributes because coconut sap is rich in aminos, it's rich in minerals, so it has a beneficial, you know, hydrating effect, as well as rich in vitamins. And on top of that, it happens to be the sort of leading low glycemic sweetener. So this is a raw material that's very, very unique, but also very difficult to manage. So the business model really became to integrate, I like to say integrate from the soil, because we base our farming on regenerative agricultural practices, and we've adopted some of the ancient Asian techniques that come from natural farming. So this is really about activating the microbial environment in the soil, mm-hmm. And then working all the way up, and then be able to, because when you harvest from the flower of the coconut, you literally need to harvest every single palm 3 times a day.
Oh, wow.
So this becomes a massive logistic operation where the time from harvest to processing in our own factory is down to a few hours, which is obviously a very, very different kind of operation compared to normal coconut farming, where your raw material supply is disconnected. I mean, these are independent farmers that, you know, where the factories or processors, they source from, you know, several days of truck rides away from where the factory is. So it's a very, very demanding kind of operation, but obviously also one that creates an opportunity to create a lot more value, because your calorific value is significantly higher. And that became the sort of foundation for this concept of, if you want to be able to share this value to uplift the lives of people in the global south, you really just need to be able to create more value. And that's kind of what inspired us.
Yeah, well, you know, you're perfect at segues here, Christian, because that was going to be my next question as well, is what inspired you to do this? Because it seems like it's definitely a lot of work, something that requires vision, is for a good cause, undoubtedly. But I don't think many people would necessarily naturally want to pursue such an undertaking. So what drove you?
Well, that's a tough question, because sometimes I wonder how I got myself into this. I was living quite a comfortable life. You know, actually I was in Europe, but traveling and managing various business involvements in Asia. And when this idea, you know, came up, and I just quite quickly realized that just wasn't going to be possible unless I was willing to put myself in the middle of it. Because when I arrived here, we did not have cemented roads for 200 kilometers around the farm. We did not have electricity. Huh. We did not have mobile connectivity. And no one had ever had a job working in any kind of large organization before. Today, we create work for up towards 2,000 people every day. And we are completely digitalized from one end to the other. And we are able to bring sweeteners, condiments, and now we're launching beverages to the global market. So we take this one single raw material, which is the coconut sap, and we're able to open this world of different, very exciting products in these three categories of sweeteners, condiments, and beverages. And to do that in probably what is one of the most sustainable ways, because we have zero waste. We base most of our energy on thermal energy, which source from agricultural waste, and all the inputs that we use for our own production of bio-organic fertilizers, which is more than 2 million pounds per month that we that we put back into the soil, is produced all from agricultural waste and different inputs that we source in the local community. So you get this circular economy. and you drive this ecosystem that promotes a lot of entrepreneurship and a lot of opportunity for people in the local community. I think that these kind of business models where you are willing to address, should we say, all the issues, all the challenges along the vertical,
right,
is a big part of the future for farming and food production in the Global South. And that's what I think we're proving. And that was recognized with us also becoming the Sustainability Company of the Year with Asia CEO. And we've sort of put ourselves in at the front of many of those conversations around how can we bring a sustainable transformation to agriculture in this part of the world.
Well, it's cool because I think you are, you know, kind of checking all the boxes for what we hear out of the industry from the food manufacturing side these days, a focus on sustainability, true economic empowerment, all the things that folks are focusing more on these days to not simply, what's the term I hear you throwing around now, greenwashing. it is not that, which your operation is providing both to the community and, you know, to the environment is definitely admirable. And I think is a story that resonates with a lot of folks that really want to be positively impactful in this space and be able to, you know, sort of proverbially leave things better than when you found it.
Yeah, and I think there's a quite a beautiful story around the coconut palm, because I you've heard me mention that, you know, it's a very efficient photosynthesis that happens in the coconut palm that drives to this high calorific value. But what does that actually mean also from a sustainability point of view, other than being able to, you know, create employment with living wages? It also means that you only need two coconut palms to essentially offset 1 ton of CO2 emissions per year.
Wow.
And so that makes the coconut palm one of the most efficient crops out there that can actually bring agriculture to the forefront of being able to mitigate the climate issues that we have. And it's very, very efficient in terms of its water usage also. So as you said, there's a lot of boxes that gets ticked in this process. And if you look at our coconut aminos, for example, they're net negative in terms of emissions and their footprint when they arrive in the U.S. market. So I think there's a big future in these kind of products. It's definitely a very sustainable raw material. And I think that raw material, what we now need to see, because obviously the early adoption is driven by what you could call a little bit more niche health brands. And I think right. Many people will be familiar with products like coconut sugar.
Yeah.
Coconut aminos is becoming, I would say, a leading alternative to a healthy alternative to soy sauce. And there are many more applications. And what we've specialized in is being able to meet the market within very stringent technical requirements and being able to execute that from this rather remote area to international standards.
Yeah, that is amazing, Christian. As I'm even as you're talking about it, I'm as amazed listening to you speak about it as seeing it with my own two eyes. The ground you've made and the again, kind of that positive impact all the way around that, you know, gets everybody what they need in a multifaceted way. You know, beyond just the ingredient, but everything it does outside of its usage in a food product, which I think kind of brings me to my last question, because of course, this wouldn't be a McKinney Flavelle podcast if we didn't spend at least a little bit of time on the markets themselves. And I know on our end, we've definitely seen more interest in this space of coconut-based sweeteners and kind of coconut-based products more broadly speaking. You care to share any thoughts on the current market and what users or potential users of these products can expect to see in 2024?
Yeah, I think there are, if we start with a little bit of the somewhat longer-term perspective on that, I think there are two things that we need to do. One, we need to build a scalable supply. I think I've always believed that having a supply that is scalable, so that can allow more users to come into this raw material. So building scale to supply, I think, is a big part of that. And that's integral to the way in which we have designed this farm to exclusively focus on this kind of harvesting. And without going into the specific sort of volumes, but we would be, you know, reaching, you know, more than a million kilos of this coconut sap raw material per day. So that, I think, indicates some level of that scale that we're aiming towards. But obviously, we have got to see the palms becoming fruit bearing. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. I think building scale to supply is a very important part of this.
Definitely.
And obviously at the right quality and so forth. And the second one is that as we realize scale, what we will also see is that what is now, let's call it a little bit of a niche raw material, that obviously comes at slightly higher prices.
Sure.
Still comparable prices to many other healthy sweeteners that are out there. But I think there's an opportunity actually in the long term to see the price of this move down as we can already now see what are those productivity gains that we get with scale that will allow us to drive down unit cost. And as we do that, we can open it up to broader commodity and ingredient use purposes or use cases. And I think that's kind of the long-term future. Now, in the more immediate term, I think if we're talking 2024, 2025, we're probably not going to see a big change in the price. I think the prices have been quite stable, and I don't really see any change to that. But in a sort of 2-3-4 year time frame, medium term, I think we will start to see the scale come into play. We'll start to see the ability for unit cost to come down, and that is how we can develop the future together with industry. And I think the other thing that's important to this is, of course, that this is a very, as you said, it's not only a very sustainable raw material, but it also has some very unique health attributes because we're able to process it in what we, you know, call under low temperature, that is able to retain the integrity of those health benefits that are in the raw material, which makes it suitable for a lot of special applications. And I think that what we need to do is obviously work together to try to improve the understanding of how this raw material can be not only sourced, but also applied to to specific products.
Absolutely agree with you on that, Christian. The fairly newer introduction I've received to it, it certainly managed to get my attention. And I know from a client or, you know, food manufacturer standpoint, anything that suggests that an ingredient price could be moving lower longer term as opposed to higher. I say that for all my edible and vegetable oil buyers, they know exactly what I mean with that one. But that's promising news to see greater inclusion of the ingredient in a broader base of products. And like you mentioned, you know, today seen as more niche and is more of a specialty ingredient, but as people, you know, come to appreciate the product, the benefits of it all the way around, again, could, you know, at some point envision, if not quite a commoditized product, but certainly a very commercially available product down the road that, to your point with scalability, will help to put a little pressure on prices, but also provide price stability, which frankly, you know, that's arguably just as important as what the actual number is these products that help to reduce sort of cost volatility for the end user. So ultimately, that was great.
Yeah, and I think you just touched on an interesting point with regards to cost volatility, because if you're sourcing directly from the underlying farm, and keeping in mind, just again, let's remember the coconut palm has, you know, more than a 50-year life, and it's sort of the one time the palm itself is sort of the delivery vehicle of that supply for the full duration of that period. So, you know, you're not kind of exposed to the same variability in terms of from one season to the next season. I mean, once that palm becomes productive, you can look 50 years into the future, and that creates a very, very stable and predictable source of raw material. As I said, as you can then drive, you know, down cost through work productivity, through selection of obviously the right varieties, where we're talking about yield differences of, you know, 2 to 3 times in terms of yield improvement. So I think there's a fantastic future for this kind of raw material to be adopted for many different kind of applications.
I definitely agree with you on that one, Christian. Well, this has all been fascinating, sir. Again, like I said, it was a pleasure to meet you a couple of months back, and the rest of the team at Lionhearts. Your hospitality was top-notch and definitely made for a great experience for my first trip to the Philippines. But again, thank you for your time, Christian. I really appreciate you doing this for us. And, you know, for our listeners, you can have the opportunity to meet Christian in person, maybe pick his brain a little bit about these subjects of regenerative farming and coconut-derived products and sustainability as a whole, and how that might, you know, work for some of the products you're developing, as he will be presenting at our spring seminar in Oak Brook, Illinois on Wednesday, April 17th. And if you'd like to register for the seminar, you can do so via our website, www.mckinney-flavelle.com. Again, Christian, thank you so much for taking time out with me today.
Well, thank you, Nicole, and I wish you all a great day.
Thank you, sir. Well, that wraps up our weekly Hot Commodity Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening in. And as our fearless leader, Mike, always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. Until next time, take care, everyone.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.